Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and I can't believe we're already halfway through the year. I thought I'd take this opportunity to take a look back at the movie year we've had by counting down my top five films of 2022 so far. Joining me and sharing his own list is film critic Russell Miller. Don't go anywhere.
This is Wang. Mrs. Wang, are you with us?
I am paying attention.
Now, you may only see a pile of receipts, but I see a story. I can see where this story is going. It does not look good. What's happening?
Your husband. I'm another version of him from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
Welcome to Art House Garage. You know, I love a good list episode on a podcast. I look forward every year to the best of the year lists that usually come out around December, reading and listening to my favorite film critics and seeing what we have in common or what movies I still need to make time for. We're here in July of 2022, with half a year behind us. What better excuse do I need to start looking at my favorite films I've watched this year? To help me out, I've got film critic Russell Miller here to share his list as well. Russell is a film critic out of North Carolina, writing his own reviews at Miller's Movies. I'll link to that and to his Twitter profile in the show notes. After you listen to our list, I'd love to hear what you think. What's your top film so far this year? Do you agree or disagree with our picks? Email me and let me know, andrew@arthousegarage.com. Also, in the show notes, I'll make sure to link to all the films we discuss on justwatch.com, which tells you where you can stream them or buy tickets for each of these titles. And with that, let's get into my conversation with Russell Miller about the top five films of 2022 so far. Welcome to the show, Russell Miller. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that. So, yeah, initially you reached out to me by email and, you know, we thought, oh, it's a fellow film critic. We got to get on the show together. And it took some time, but we finally made it. So I'm so glad that we did. Well, we're going to talk about today the top five films so far of 2022. And before we get into that, I wanted to ask, do you think generally it's been a good year for film in your mind or not? What do you think?
Oh, yeah, it's been an interesting year. I mean, overall, like the quality of the films coming out been really pretty solid, I felt, for a spring. You know, the releases we got all through the spring and now we're into the summer blockbuster season. Last year seemed to be really... backloaded, maybe because of the pandemic still kind of going on or whatnot. I don't know. But most of the movies that I really loved coming out of last year were towards the fall and the winter months. Whereas this year, just as an example, I rate my movies 1 to 10 for my blog. And at this point last year, I had one movie that I had given a 9. And nothing higher than that. And this year I've already given out 3 9s. So maybe I'm just being more generous. I don't know what. But some movies I really, really enjoyed so far this year. So
I completely agree. I think it's funny with the pandemic. So many things have been held. Like, for instance, Top Gun Maverick was held for so long and finally is released. And I think there's a lot of movies in that boat that they're like, oh, we really would like to have the theatrical for this. And I think that's added up to end of 2021 and into this year has been, I think, pretty strong with smaller movies, which we'll talk more about in a minute. But then also with the blockbusters, like Top Gun, like the Batman, I have really enjoyed some of those kind of bigger movies. I think been pretty solid. So let's get into it. Who should go first? Do you want to go first? What's your, we're going to count down 5 through 1 and kind of go back and forth. So yeah, why don't you go first? You're the guest here. What is your number 5 film of 2022 so far?
So my number 5 movie of 2022 so far, and this was the toughest one. Like I really went back and forth trying to figure out which one was gonna make the cut, but I finally landed on a movie that I just got to see the other week. Was Top Gun Maverick. Finally,
nice.
It was in IMAX, and I didn't get to see it that first initial run, but then it came back, and I was like, okay, I gotta see it now. The hype is is spiraled out of control. Like I need to, you know, check this out and see what this IMAX deal is. And it was just really impressive. And it wasn't like a perfect movie by any means. I mean, I had some critiques with it, but really it was just from the moment and you've seen Top Gun Maverick, from the moment the opening music kicks in and it's got the old font of the opening credits. Mm-hmm. Like I just had a smile on my face. I'm just sitting there like giddy. And I'm not even like the hugest fan of the old Top Gun movie. I enjoyed it. It's one of those 80s movies you can always put on and watch and have a good time with, but it's not in my top 20 movies of all time or anything like that. But it's just a really fun movie, a lot of action, and I mean the editing, it's those aerial shots are just, I mean, you don't see that in movies. It's incredible stuff. See an IMAX. And I just had a blast at Tom Cruise, I mean, guy's still got it. Yeah. He's still getting it done. I mean, so that was my one of my favorite movies of the last few weeks. I really had a good time with Top Gun.
I completely agree. I really like Top Gun Maverick as well. It's not on my list, but I considered it pretty seriously. You know, it's funny. I actually never saw the original Top Gun until about a month before I watched the new one. And I was like, well, I got to finally watch. It's one of those movies I've always been like, oh, I got to watch this eventually. Like, well, now is definitely the time. But yeah, like you're saying, that opening, it could almost be from the original. Like I think the text is even the same and the music's just right. And yeah, I think I was really enjoying it and like with it for all of it, but then that ending, the final, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I thought the final section of that action scene really pushed it over the edge to make it fantastic. And yeah, like we have so much just CGI everything these days, especially with big movies. And yeah, like you're saying, those aerial shots make it feel really special. And yeah, so much hype around it, you know, playing at Cannes and giving Tom Cruise the honorary Palme d'Or and all this, like this movie must be amazing. And then it was really good. And just what the box office needs too, I think, is to finally
get some kickstarted the box office in a big way. What, it's cracked a billion now? A billion?
Yeah, I think so.
1.1 billion? I don't know, but good for Tom.
Yeah, his biggest movie ever, I think, is what I read, which is wild because he's had so many big ones. But, well, my number 5 is a film. So often with these, and like I think all the others on my list, it's like, oh, I wish I had time to watch it a second or a third time to really make sure what I think about it. But this one, I've actually seen a billion times because it's a kid movie, a family film that my kids have watched over and over, and I've seen many times now. And that's Pixar's Turning Red. I really fell hard for this one. I really enjoyed it. It's director Domi Shi, starring Rosalie Chang and Sandra Oh. So if you haven't seen it, it's a coming of age story. And you know, it's funny, the trailers didn't really excite me when I first saw, like, I'm always, you know, curious about what Pixar's doing, but the trailer's like, I don't know if that, maybe not for me. But then when I watched it, I just really loved it. I think it's one of the better Pixar films of the last few years. It's got this kind of period piece feel to it with early 2000s, and the boy band music is a big part of
that.
And again, heard those songs a million times because my kids love them. And, so it's lucky that it's so good, because so many of those kid songs in the world I don't love, but these from this movie, I'm like, okay, I can listen to those a bunch of times and not get too sick of it. The generational divide stuff I thought was really handled well. And it's just kind of a really unique take on the coming of age story with this, you know, metaphor of the red panda and all that. And, it continues to hold up every time. I think it's, the voice acting is really fantastic, especially that lead character, Mei Mei, which is Rosalie Chang. And yeah, I think very highly of that film.
I'm Mei Lin Lee, and ever since I turned 2013, I've been doing my own thing, making my own moves, 24/7, 365. I wear what I want, say what I want, and I will not hesitate to do a spontaneous cartwheel if I feel so moved. Crap! Not to brag, but being 13 means I'm officially a grown-up, at least according to the Toronto Transit Commission.
Good for you.
Hustle, am I right?
Have you seen Turning Red?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, my kids aren't as big a fans as of it as I was. I was pretty enraptured by that movie. And it was surprising. Like, I mean, it doesn't address you know, some of the changes that, you know, obviously kids go through from being little kids and then moving into the teenage years. It doesn't come right out with those things, but it more or less kind of alludes to them. And just the relationship dynamics between the kids and their parents through those changes, I found to be really fascinating and really well explored. It normalized something that is just never talked about in kids' movies. You know, like it is not a big deal to, you know, become a man or to become a woman, to become a young adult. Mm-hmm. And I thought the way that it kind of handled those topics, that's one that I'll look forward to. My boys are still pretty young. They're 8 and 10. And like I said, it wasn't really their speed. But once they kind of get into those early to mid teenage years, that's a movie that I'll be curious to watch with them again and talk through some of those issues of, you know, kids becoming young adults. I thought it was so well handled and really, really well done. I enjoyed Turning Red quite a bit.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I think so, like right now my kids are pretty young. They're 7 and 8. And I think just love, oh, the panda's cute. The music's fun. Yeah. It's funny when she gets mad. Like they can pick up on like the, I feel awkward when my mom's there, that kind of stuff. But you're right. I think those kind of deeper themes are resonating for me and hopefully will for them one day too. It was funny. It was like, it was Encanto every day for a while. And that finally got knocked out of the running when Turning Red came out. I love Encanto as well, but so that's my number five for the year so far. I think it's my only family film on here. So a little more mature going forward. But anyway, let's move on to your number four. What's your number four of 2022?
Number four. So the four through one were the movies that I had the least trouble with. The five was the one that was I was grappling with. But I had my top four pretty well locked in. And my number four, it's like a lot of other people's number ones and number twos. But it was Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And critics love this movie, and I really, really enjoyed it. it's a wild movie.
Yeah.
What the Daniels are able to accomplish is it's pretty remarkable. I mean, looking back on it, because I haven't watched it since it first came out. It's a movie it'll be out on Blu-ray in another week or so here, and I'm excited to see it again. But it's so wild. It's so original. Just does so many things that, it almost, and that's what kind of held it back for me a little bit, was it almost got a little too out there, like as far as its crazy, wild antics that it gets into. It almost lost me, like just how outrageous it was. Where a few points of the movie I was like, come on now, like this is, you know, but then it would kind of reel you back in, and Michelle Yeoh is just so wonderful.
Oh, she's fantastic. Yeah.
And in her sequences with her daughter really kind of restabilized the movie when it was borderline about to derail. It would kind of pull back to that. There's just so much to love about that movie. And it's, like I said before, even in the kind of the vein of the Top Gun, it's just a lot of fun. Like, it's hard to not enjoy yourself watching that movie, even though it just does get a little bit crazy. It reminds me of when Cypher tells Neo, it's like, you know, in the Matrix, he's like, buckle your seatbelt, Dorothy, because Kansas is going bye-bye, you know. Like, I thought of that when I was watching that movie. It was just, like, it was so crazy. And the Daniels, like, they know no boundaries. Like, they're just, it doesn't matter that the boundaries of normalcy that all other films operate in, it's like, we don't care about that. We're going to make the movie that we want to make. And, it's just, it's almost impossible to not have fun watching that, watching that film.
You see it all, don't you? You can see how everything is just a random rearrangement of particles in a vibrating superposition.
I have no idea what you are talking about, but I can...
But you see how everything... gets washed away in a sea of every other possibility.
I completely agree. And that, so when you said a lot of critics have this higher on their list, I was like, I bet that's what he's going to say. So this is not the way I planned to do the format, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about that movie too. That's actually my number three. So I'm going to jump ahead just because I want to go ahead and talk about it now. I don't have much to add. I think you put it really well. It's so, I love the kind of the frenetic energy of it. And it's so wild and creative. And, but it manages to do a lot, but keep you pretty much understanding, like, and I've seen it twice. I went and saw it, and then I was like, I got to bring my wife to see this. And like the sci-fi elements of it work in its favor. And it's, you don't get too lost, I guess, as you're going, even though it's so chaotic. I think if I have anything negative to say, it's just that I felt exhausted at the end of the movie. It's so maximalist. I was like, that is a lot. Yeah. I need to go rest now.
But I really did like it. Now.
exactly. Yeah. But such a wild and creative piece of storytelling. It really feels like a unique, uniquely created thing that it's like, I had to include this on my list because we'll look back at 2022 and this might be the movie I remember the most, I think. Because it's just such a, and I'm so glad it's finding its audience. So it's A24's biggest movie ever now, which is really cool. And I just love the kind of the breakdown of depression and that kind of the feeling of overwhelm that we're all so familiar with, you know, after pandemic and everything else, and also generational trauma again, which was part of Turning Red as well. That's going to be, I think that comes up in a bunch of my movies too, that are on my list.
Toxic parenting.
And just how do we have empathy for both sides of that? And I think that's what the movie does really well, is because, we absolutely understand why Stephanie Hsu's character, the daughter, blanking on her name with Joy, why she is so devastated by the way her mother speaks about her and treats her. But then we also see Michelle Yeoh's, like, what her life is like and how it's really hard for her to make that connection, but they ultimately do. And it's really beautiful. So yes, that's my number three. So I jumped ahead on you. So I guess I'll go back now to my number four. Yes, thank you. I know that a lot of critics are probably going to have that, like, number one of the year, number two. And I thought about, like, I considered that a lot, but there's a couple movies that just edged it out for me. But my number four going back is one. This is a weird one that I'm going to have to probably explain quite a bit. It's called The Cow Who Sang a Song into the Future. And this movie I saw, I was able to do a few virtual Sundance movies this year.
Yeah, I knew it was fun.
And yes, it's one that I think got some attention there, but it was my favorite thing that I watched. It's a Chilean director named Francisca Alegría. And so it's got a lot going on, but basically the story opens. We see this beautiful river. There's a lot of nature imagery in it. And we see this river and this young woman just bursts out of the river and she's wearing a motorcycle helmet. And then we learn that she died there many years before, like something like 50 years prior. And suddenly she's come back to life. And her husband runs a dairy farm nearby. She has not aged in this time. So her husband's now much older than she is. So when he sees her, he has this episode. He goes into shock and he goes to the hospital. And then all the extended family gather. And so it ends up being a family story where we're seeing the, again, generational dynamics. There's two adult children and two grandchildren. And one of the grandkids is a trans woman as well. And she's really struggling to be accepted by her mother. And it's not even out to the rest of her family. And so that's a big part of the story. But at the same time, there's this ecological crisis going on. All the fish are dying in this same river. And so it's like whatever brought her to life mysteriously is also causing a problem. So the fish are dying, which is causing the plants to die. And it's affecting all these other like the farms in the area. And so that's kind of the plot. And that may sound really odd, and it is, but I really found it beautiful. It's very quiet, very surprising. There's some grief in there, like themes of grief, you know, because we lost this matriarch of our family and now suddenly she's here. And she only appears at certain moments to different characters, which is interesting as well. It's very beautifully shot. Some of it could be straight out of a nature documentary. And then the title, The Cow Who Sang a Song, what that's referring to is there's these sequences where this music is playing in the soundtrack. It's not clear whether the humans in the film can hear the lyrics that we're hearing as the audience, and they're translated in the subtitles as well. And it's these sort of laments about the dying earth. And so it's very much like a ecological kind of a environmental film as well. And there's sort of this sense of impending doom. And it's like, are the animals singing this? Are the trees singing it? It's hard to quite understand. So it's very mysterious. It reminds me a lot, actually, of the films of Apichit Pong Weerasethakul, the director of Memoria and Uncle Boon Mi, Uncle Boon Mi, he couldn't recall his past lives. It's that kind of vibe, but quite a bit easier to access, I think. So it's a film that I think it's, so for people who are like, that's his films are a little out there for me, this one I think you could grasp onto. So I'll highly recommend it. It's odd, but I found it so beautiful and engrossing. And they played Sundance, so I don't know what the release is going to be like, but hopefully this year it'll hit theaters or VOD. And I highly encourage people to check it out.
Yeah, I have not seen that one. I got to catch, I think it was like 22 or 23 movies at Sundance, and I heard that was a good one, but I just didn't get a chance to squeeze that one in. But I'll definitely have to make it a point to once it drops somewhere.
Yeah, it was funny. I only saw, I think, 5 movies. I was like, I can make time for a few. And that was one of them. It really just depended on the time of day and what sounded interesting. Exactly. So I was like, felt like a complete fluke that I saw this and loved it so much. So,
Fantastic. Those are the best ones when you have like no idea what you're getting yourself into. And then it just kind of like knocks your socks off. You're like, wow, what a cool movie.
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely the experience. Yeah, so that's my number 4. And the title again is The Cow Who Sang a Song into the Future. And the original title is in Spanish. So I don't know exactly what it translates to, but yeah, that's the one. Well, I guess that brings us back to the number 3 slot. And okay, what's your number 3? Yeah.
So number 3 for me, it probably isn't, it's not out yet, but probably by the time this recording drops, it should be in theaters. And that is Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Oh, nice.
And I got to see it last week in IMAX, and it was just a treat. Taika Waititi is a genius. I know some people are kind of like iffy on his humor. Mm. If you've followed him through What We Do in the Shadows, or if you know, a lot of critics loved Thor Ragnarok, you know, that was made a lot of people's top film, you know, in the top films of that year, 2017. But I think he was like, he was just warming up with that whole, genre, with that character. Like Ragnarok was just, you know, he was just kind of getting the feel for that. And what he does with Thor, Love, and Thunder was just, I mean, it was incredible. Like I'll just say, I haven't clapped at a movie in a long time, but at the end of that movie, like I had such a riot, like I was so compelled to clap at the end of that movie. I couldn't overcome. Like, so Taika is, I mean, it's clear he understands that genre, that character. He milks it for all that he can get out of it. Like the humor, it's I mean, and it's not, like I said, just jokes about, you know, his goofy, wacky sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Within the first few minutes, and maybe you may not have seen this movie yet. I don't want to spoil it for a lot of the people that might be listening or haven't gotten to the theater yet to see it. But he teases out some of the things from the other Avengers movies, the other Thor movies, that, you know, he just has so much fun with the character. It reminded me of the Lego Batman movie Lego Batman is so great. My kids love it. But but the funny part of that movie is it's so well put together for adults because it breaks down the Batman character in a way that none of the other Batman movies have ever done. And I can't speak to the animated cartoons because I haven't seen hardly any of those. I've heard good things about some of them. But yeah, I mean, that movie and the Thor Love and Thunder, when the director understands the character and they're able to like deconstruct it and just have a good time, like have fun with it, explore, you know, the superhero tropes, you know, what works about them, what is maybe problematic with them. It was just so well done. And I found Taika's take on that to just be utterly fantastic. And again, not to like kind of coming right off of my other Top Gun and Everything Everywhere. I mean, it's just so much fun. I haven't had this much fun in the theaters in a long time. These last few weeks, few months, like I've just had so much fun going to see these movies. It's really been a blast. And Taika's, you know, in Thor and Love and Thunder is just hilarious. It's just a good time.
Kids, get the popcorn out.
Let me tell you the story of the space Viking,
Thor Odinson. He was no ordinary man. He was a god. After saving planet Earth for the 500th time, Thor set off on a new journey. Well, he got in shape. He went from dad bod to god bod. And after all that,
Mjolnir,
he reclaimed his title as the one and only Thor. Oh, spoke too soon.
Jane?
That's great. I'm so excited to hear that because that's one that I've been like, oh, I really like Taika Waititi. I've been kind of mixed on Marvel stuff lately. And so I've just not been totally sure. And I love Thor Ragnarok. I think it's certainly the best of the three Thor movies. But I still felt that it kind of fell into the Marvel, like the final act is just
stereotypes. It's just
kind of action and like what else is happening. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to bust on, you know, Disney, and this is obviously not the podcast to just like go like run all your Marvel fans out of the building, but you know, they follow the same, a lot of the films follow the same formula. There's an action scene right at the beginning of the movie. A lot of the emotional beats, you know, the bad guy's going to lose, the good guy's going to win. You know, most of the Marvel movies, like all the ones from last year, you know, none of them made my top 10 list. None of them were like, I enjoyed some of them a little more than others, but you know, most of the time I just don't get that excited for Marvel movies these days. And I was really taken aback by Love and Thunder, like the soundtrack calling back to, you know, a lot of classic rock tunes while they're doing their crazy shenanigans. It was just a lot of fun. If you like Marvel movies, you'll probably be pretty happy when you get a chance to catch the new Thor flick.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that because really I have been kind of mixed hype on that, and now I'm very excited. Yeah, because I think with Thor Ragnarok it took that kind of formula, but I added this humor into it, and that was a lot of fun. But I'm glad to know that this maybe pushes that further and breaks out of that. And I'm really excited with the villain in this. He looks
Christian Bale. Christian Bale,
the God My Butcher, goodness. Looks really interesting. So yeah,
he's he's something else, man. He's a fantastic actor, and it was really cool because Bale is he's such a recognizable face, but they have him like with the white paint and like the markings and stuff. And he kind of, you know, he's got these contacts in, and you kind of don't see Bale when you're watching him. You're seeing this character, and it's not, you know, it's not coming through to you as like, what's Christian Bale doing? You're like, who is this crazy guy that's, you know, so pissed off and trying to like just wreck everybody. So he kind of gets lost in the character and in the roles. It was pretty, pretty fantastic.
That's great. Well, great. I love that you included Thor on this list, because I didn't expect it. I guess if we're going to go back, so I've already talked about number three. So, and maybe your turn again to do your number two.
Back to number two. So number two for me, going back to the Sundance Film Festival, and I don't think it was the last film. No, it wasn't, because they had like the all the awards that they give out, and those films, you can watch them again the final weekend. But right before that, it was like the last addition to the film festival was the documentary Navalny. About Alexei Navalny, the Russian like politician / anti-corruption guy. I mean, it was I had heard the name Navalny before, you know, just watching CNN or just hearing about it in the news, but I didn't really pay much attention. You know, it's something that happened over in Russia before the war broke out, you know, so I never really followed any of the events around this guy or what he was doing, what he was all about. And, you know, that it was actual real world events. It really, I mean, that this documentary covers and follows, these events that transpire, are as riveting as any spy thriller suspense movie, like, you know, like the Bond movies, the Bourne Identity movies, you know, they are all these spy thrillers. And this was like a real life one of those films just like playing out, and I can watch these people, and this is all real. I mean, I was like blown away, because even though, like I mentioned, I had heard about this guy, learning, and I won't get too far into the plot details, you know, for those that haven't really heard about it, but this guy, Alexei Navalny, is a, I guess he's more or less the main challenger to Vladimir Putin. Like, he's been rallying people in Russia and calling out the corruption of the government, which of course we're a lot more familiar with now that we're seeing, you know, the war in Ukraine play out, and we can see, you know, just what a what a cesspool of lies and filth this government is. But yeah, like so basically, this guy that's, I guess, running for office there or challenging Putin, you know, he's put a huge target on his back, you know, against one of the most powerful men on the planet, and just calling him out for all this stuff. And I mean, it was just absolutely enthralling to see how, I guess, the main beat that the movie revolves around is that this guy, in August of 2020, he gets poisoned on an airplane traveling to Moscow, and the documentary follows the events and the investigation that they do after he gets basically like attacked. They like try and like kill the guy, and it is just, I mean, it's one of the most riveting and there was a ton of good documentaries out of Sundance. I got to see quite a few of them. I didn't get to see all the ones I wanted to. But it was, like I said, it was absolutely captivating, right up there with, you know, some of the best suspense spy movies, but all based in reality. Like, this stuff actually happened. I was just blown away. I was really, I mean, not just impressed by the movie itself and how it was put together. It kind of started, you know, with him boarding the plane, because he went back to Moscow to like try and, you know, return to his home country. But yeah, like the way the story progressive and it kind of goes back, it was just so well put together and so interesting. I I was really, really impressed.
Okay, so Alexei, I want to talk about something that we sort of touched on this morning. And you might hate this, but I really want you to think about it. If you are killed, if this does happen, what message do you leave behind to the Russian people?
Alexei Navalny has taken on the most dangerous job in the world, challenging the leader of the Kremlin, Vladimir Putin.
If I want to be a leader of this country, if I want to fight Putin, I have to organize people.
Война в Украине и война в Сирии. Я прекращу войну.
The Kremlin hates Navalny so much, they refuse to say his name.
I was banned from everything and blacklisted. But as I became more and more famous, I was totally sure that it will be problematic for them to kill me.
And boy, were you wrong.
Yes, I was very wrong.
By the documentary Navalny. It came out, I think, about a month ago, maybe around Memorial Day.
HBO. I think it's been released. Yeah, okay. HBO so it is Max streaming on HBO now. Wow, okay.
Yeah, HBO Max. It's a HBO CNN feature. Yeah, I can't recommend that movie enough, especially considering the events that have transpired since late February and March,
Yeah, it sounds like it's only become more timely since it came out. Absolutely. That's amazing. I've heard the title. I didn't really know anything about that film, so I'm very excited to watch that now. And just as a note, I'll go through in the show notes and any of these that are streaming or, VOD link to those things. So yeah, good to know this one's on HBO. Definitely going to be adding that to my list. That sounds amazing. I love those documentaries that feel so, and it's just also too, like, it's such a recent history that you'll be able to continue to follow Navalny's story, like the next 5-10 years, who knows what will happen there. Wow. That's another unexpected choice. I'm excited to check that one out.
After a bunch of action movies, you figure I was just going to go another big blockbuster.
Curveball.
I had to change it up somewhere.
There you go. My number two is a movie that, I think it's out in limited release right now. And it's one that I haven't, it's not on a ton of people's radar, so I want to put it there. It's a movie called Poser, and it's directed by Noah Dixon and Ori Segev. And this is a story about a young woman. Her name's Lennon, played by Sylvie Mix is the actor's name. And she is obsessed with the underground music scene in Columbus, Ohio. First of all, who knew Columbus had such a rich indie music scene? But it does, because a lot of the people she's interviewing, and so she becomes a podcaster. That's her way into this music scene she loves. And a lot of the artists in the film are real artists. I think most of them are. And she's interviewing them. She's going to their concerts. Some really great concert footage. And I don't know. It feels like it really captures the feeling of like being a fan and being obsessed with something. And the poser element of it is so interesting, because she feels like she is not, as artistic as these people she loves. And so her way is to, I'm just going to talk about it and do this podcast, which felt very relevant to myself as someone who, I really love filmmakers, and I'm going to make this podcast about it. And I think the podcast in its own way is art, but it's interesting. It's kind of this great examination of art and the creative drive. And it ends up, so she becomes really obsessed with one band in particular. The band is called Damn the Witch Siren. And the lead singer's name is Bobby Kitten. And that's all real. And Bobby plays herself in the movie, but it's sort of a hyper version of herself or something. They become friends, and it almost becomes an All About Eve kind of story, where this young up and comer, I don't want to spoil where it goes, but things get dramatic, I'll just say. But yeah, it really just captures the excitement of indie music and just of being interested in art that you feel like not enough people know about and you want to share about it. So I really was fascinated. And then that lead performance by Sylvie Mix, she's very kind of like almost monotone and kind of like low key and shy. And she just carries her phone around with these headphones plugged in and records everything. And so it's such an image of her just talking to people in the film. It's really... there's kind of this paranoia feeling to the whole movie as well. Visually, I thought it was really good. And you get to know a lot of real artists, and it really it cares about the music. Like the music that's featured in the film is really good. Like you can go stream the album that like has all these artists on it. And it also, it's interesting because there's, and this is something that I've always thought about, so I think this connected with me as well, like the line of what's pretentious and what's not is kind of explored a little bit. One of her initial things, it's really played for laughs how pretentious this one artist is. And I think part of the joke is that she's still eating it up and she's so interested in it. When you hear this artist kind of going on about this nonsense that they're part of their creative process, but it still is this love letter to artists and to art. And yeah, I just really, really connected with it, and hope more people will check out Poser.
I've been looking for a new apartment.
Where?
I don't know. I want more space to be creative.
I've always had an interest in collecting sound.
Do you mind if I interview you for my podcast?
Music?
Yeah, I like music.
Me too.
Interesting. Where did you get to see that? Is it available right now?
It's in limited release, I think, in LA and New York, and I got a screener. Okay. It's from Oscilloscope. I think that's right. I'm going to double check that. And that's a studio. I often am a fan of their movies. And so I try to get those for review whenever I can. And that's one that, so I imagine it'll go to more wide release soon, or it will be on VOD before too long, I think. So that's my number two.
Very cool.
You already did your number two, right? That was the Volney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So now it's time for number one. I know what yours is, and I think we might have it in common as well. We'll see. Go ahead.
Do we do it?
Maybe. What's your number one?
Number one is After Yang.
It is. Me too.
Oh, wow. Well,
I'll let you take the lead, but yes, loved this movie.
What are the odds? Yeah, I mean, going from, like a bunch of blockbusters to now a documentary, and After Yang is pretty much like the quietest, like, most toned down movie imaginable, like coming out of because I got to see it at Sundance. It was actually the first movie that I got to watch at Sundance, and I was immediately just enthralled with Coconato, which is crazy because I have not seen Columbus. I'm gonna call myself out
there.
Like as soon as I watched this, I was like, who is this director? And so I immediately put Columbus on my iTunes list, and so I'm waiting to pick it up and watch it one of these days. But what Coconata does, it's such a quiet, delicate film. His even though his style of filmmaking is more contemplative. He's not like trying to teach you something. He's not trying to instruct you. He's more like proposing these questions about time, about our memories, about how we, the things that we value, I guess. He's throwing these things out there and just kind of maybe making some suggestions, but ultimately allowing you to kind of sift through inwardly, like, what do I think about the time that I spend with, my family, or the time that I spend doing this? And Coconata is like a surgeon. He just like cuts in and gets to the heart of these, really deep personal matters of what, what life is to me. I was just fascinated by this film. It starts out, and I won't really give away much of the plot, but Colin Farrell is this this guy that owns Yang is the robot that he owns. And so as things start to kind of unwind in the story, the robot starts experiencing some problems. And so he starts investigating them. It kind of leads him down like into, it almost acts like it's going to become a mystery. Like what, you know, where did this robot come from? You know, what's the story behind it? What's going on? And it just kind of opens up into this, you know, really life exploring film that really took me by surprise. Again, at Sundance, it was my favorite film from Sundance. And it just stayed at the top of my favorite movies of the year list. I was just completely enraptured by what he was able to put on screen. Coconut is just such a, I was texting you the other day, I called him a wizard, but he just knows how to, you know, the craft of the movie. He just crafts this world, and it's hard to just not get caught up into it. You know, for such a quiet, delicate film that's not in your face, it's not loud. It's just so subtle, but it's just so, you know, I've used the word enrapturing or riveting several times now in describing other movies, but it just sucks
exactly
you in.
That's exactly true of this too. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Completely agree. Yeah. So that's my number one as well. Yeah. So we didn't tell each other our list, but I think you mentioned that by text the other day. And I was like, I bet that's gonna be on this list. And I wasn't sure if this would be my number one. I really deliberated between this and Poser, but it ended up like, it's one that since I saw it, it's just stuck with me. And I will highly recommend Columbus. I didn't watch it until actually this came out on Showtime. I think that's still where it's streaming. Mm-hmm. And, I ended up watching both of those in one day, and I was like, oh, this is an emotional full day. But Columbus is beautiful as well. It's not science fiction. It's much more kind of grounded in reality, and it's this kind of hometown kind of exploration. It's got a lot of architecture, which is such an interesting aspect of it, and I love Columbus. I think I actually like Columbus a little bit more, but this one is so good too. And but you mentioned like formally, like visually and everything, Coconata, before he directed any features, he created these video essays where he's breaking down Ozu and kind of Wes Anderson and like all these very visual directors, but also thematic. His video essay on Richard Linklater, which is kind of about time and memory, is so good. I'll definitely link that in the show notes. So yeah, he comes from this background, you can tell, of just loving movies and like, and you can feel all these influences, I think, in his work. And it's so beautiful and so gentle. I love the word you use, delicate. Cause I love anytime there's like a music production or something, you could just feel like this is so intentional and they're really placing these different instruments in the right spot. That's kind of how I feel about this movie too. It's like, you can tell so much care went into every piece of it. And it almost, you think it's going to be this mystery and like there is that element to it, but it's much more concerned with kind of the human questions and memory and grief and all those things. I love the scene where Colin Farrell explains why he loves tea. There's like a great conversation about that. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like when you find something that you love and are passionate about, like just building your life around it and kind of having that outpouring is just really a really beautiful moment. There's more than one kind of
a lot of beautiful moments. It just like when Yang is talking to the daughter, to Mika, I think Mika is the name.
Yeah,
he's talking about the tree and talking about like interracial families, like this is grafting. He explains it's a Chinese tradition and how like something wonderful is happening here. He says that this branches from a different tree, but now it's becoming an actual part of this tree. And I was just like, man, that's so like so many times in this movie, you just like you want to like start weeping like uncontrollably.
Yeah. And it's so well written. It's so moving. It's never, when I think about a movie that just has a lot of emotional beats like that, sometimes that sounds like something that's going to be cheesy or like it's going to try too hard to go there, but everything works so well in this. It's so well written. Yeah. So part of that story is that, their daughter is Chinese and she's adopted. And so it explains the part of this that's so interesting too, is the world building of like, it's this sci-fi world that it feels pretty close to our current world, but there's just all these elements. Like there's androids, there's clones, just kind of living life with them. And so part of the way I think the word they use is techno sapiens is the word for androids in this world. Part of what they're used for is for adopted siblings. So Yang is Chinese as well. He's, you know, an android. Yeah. And so that helps her to feel more comfortable. And so, yeah, then they have that beautiful scene where she's been bullied for being adopted. Mm-hmm. And he explains, you know, the original heritage of this branch that's been grafted into a new tree is important as well. Yeah. And, but just so beautiful. And, the world building that I mentioned is so creative and, happens so subtly. I also love the opening titles of this. It's got this surprising dance thing. Yeah. That's
like, at that point I was like, where is this movie gonna go from here? That's probably one of the most incredible opening title sequences with the credits, the opening credits. I was like, what is this? This is amazing.
It's really great. I think I talked about it. So I did an episode where I talked about this movie with Christopher Pistol, who's a film critic around here.
Yeah.
And thank you. But we talked to that episode about in Columbus, there's sort of an unexpected dance thing as well. Very different. Mm-hmm. But so it's an interesting kind of through line that, you know, in these very quiet, still movies like and I think this movie too is kind of interestingly about the body. And so like with dancing, of course we have the body moving, but then him as an android, Yang as an android, like it's not that he just dies, it's that he malfunctions and then we're not sure if he's going to come back or not. We have to go to a shop and open him up and then just the way memory works. There's end up being a device where Colin Farrell can access Yang's memories. And that's kind of where the mystery part of it comes in. So all that's so good. And then another interesting touch is as he's watching these memories, there's some scenes where like the editing is kind of overlapped and
recalling their memories.
Yeah. It's like the way he remembered it. Okay. I was more patient than I remembered, but then Yang saw that I was actually impatient in this moment or whatever. There's a lot of different elements or a lot of different moments of that, that sort of thing. So really interesting, very obviously intentional and delicate editing to this film. And it's one also that like, it was kind of dropped on streaming without, you know, it's an A24 film and they do a lot of, marketing stuff usually, but this one they didn't as much, but I know a lot of critics are loving it. So I'm hoping that more people see it. Yeah. I feel like there's more I could say, but, I also want to keep that experience intact for people who haven't seen it.
Yeah, without spoiling like anything or getting too much further into like the plot, there's the one sequence where Yang talks with Colin Farrell's wife, Kyra is her name. Jodie Turner Smith is the actress. She's fantastic in it as well. I mean, the whole cast is great, wonderful, wonderfully acted. But she has a conversation with Yang about existence and the end of it. It's as heavy and gripping, despite the fact that the movie is so quiet and delicate, like we're talking about. But that sequence to me was as heavy and gripping as any scene from any movie. I can't think of the last time that I've been like just leveled by
it's like you're hanging on every word.
I was just like, holy smokes, just blown away. And that's why ever since I just got it on Blu-ray and watched it again and wrote my review for it last week, because I wanted to like we're talking about kind of spread the word about that movie. It's so good. Obviously there's some audiences that won't, I mean, it is very, very quiet. You're not going to get a lot of action. You're not going to get a lot of, but it's just such a good film that if you have the patience and, you know, the chance to, you know, pour yourself a cup of tea and sit down with this movie, you'll probably love it.
I love it. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because based on just a description, you might think it's more of an action sci-fi or something, because we've seen that kind of thing where it's like, oh, an android and, you know, what's human and what isn't and that kind of thing. Like Blade Runner is kind of the big example. That there's lots of that's always in Star Trek and different stuff, but this is so much the other direction of it's not interested in I don't know, being like a mind bender or anything like that. It's really just exploring more human kind of aspects of what does it mean to be a person and to have memories and experiences. And to, and with the memory stuff, like the way we forget things and like, or remember things differently than other people, yeah. All of that is just so powerful. And it's a very kind of meditative, I think, is a word that I like too, that describe that film. Cause it's like, after I watched it, I was like, I got to sit still and think about this for a few minutes. Well, I'm glad we agree.
Like, give me a second. Give me a moment here.
I need 5 minutes uninterrupted. That's right. Very, very good movie.
Finish my tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, Yang. What are you doing? Come on. What happened to Yang?
I don't know. He shut down last night. He won't restart.
Has this happened before?
No.
If we can't get Yang fixed, we're not gonna buy another sibling for Mika.
It is an interior core problem. I need your permission to break open the core. We've always known that some bots are equipped with spyware. You might not want this bot in your house anymore.
I wish I had a real memory.
What do you mean?
Did Yang want to be human?
That's such a human thing to ask, isn't it?
Honest with you.
Wait, is not being honest an option for you?
Do you want him back?
Of course I do.
I want him back too. I just need a little more time.
Well, there you go. That's our list. I was going to ask too, do you have anything that almost made the list or any honorable mentions that you hope more people will seek out, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, so as of this recording, I will say, like, there's a few movies that I've heard some really good things about. I haven't caught the new RRR movie.
Me either. Ooh, I'm hoping too soon.
Yeah, like, I've heard some great things about that movie. Benediction and X. I've heard all of those are really good. I haven't gotten to those, so I don't hold them against me if I left them off the list. I haven't gotten to some of those yet, but I really did enjoy I mean, out of the film festival, as much as I've heard some people say that this year's Sundance was not as good as last year's, I really enjoyed Cha-Cha Real Smooth is now out on Apple.
I haven't caught that yet. Apple. Yeah, that's on my list for very soon.
That's a nice, that's a really nice movie. And then Happening was another movie out of Sundance
Great.
Especially with, you know, what's taking place in our country over the abortion issue right now. Without getting political on your movie podcast here,
feel free.
It really helps you kind of weigh out, like, you know, like what, how serious of a matter this is, like, holy cow. That was a, another
heavy, Happening's a beautiful film. That's one that's on my movie. Kind of almost made my list kind of movies. Yeah.
It was that one and Top Gun were vying for number five. I will say that much, but then also, Fire of Love was, another another documentary out of, Sundance that just, I mean, it's all archival footage that they found from this couple that explores volcanoes and they were volcanologists, I guess. And they, the footage that they captured, with some of these is unbelievable. I mean, I was just like kind of in awe looking at some of these things that they had captured, like in real life. You know, this isn't some sort of animated CGI. I mean, these volcanoes, the power of nature really left me kind of in awe. And the other one the last one I'll mention was The Northman, that talk about volcanoes.
Yeah, there you go.
Segue. No, we won't get into the scene from that movie, but there is a lot of stuff to appreciate about Robert Eggers' new film. It was just so well crafted. I mean, you can tell that guy's got his finger on the pulse of all the movies that he puts out, and even though it's not a real deep movie, you know, it's just a very well put together film. Really, really enjoyed that one as well. The Northman.
Yeah. I love The Northman also. I considered that one for this list too. Fire of Love has been on my list. I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard some very good things about that. I'm really looking forward to that one. Other films, I really did like The Batman from earlier this year. So I kind of considered that as more on the blockbuster side of things. Sure. I liked Men a lot. Alex Garland's new one. I know that one's been pretty mixed in the reaction, but I was a fan of it.
That one yet.
Yeah, I really liked it as well. Happening, as you mentioned, yes, I really thought that was a beautiful film. And yeah, so timely with everything with Roe being overturned and just the mess of all of that. I liked Richard Linklater's new one too, Apollo 10 and a Half. It's not one of my favorite films of his, I think, but I think it's good. And it's a very sweet, kind of quiet movie. And that one's on Netflix. And then I really seriously considered X, like you mentioned briefly. I really like that movie a lot. It's a wild horror movie, but it ends up being, so it's something that I've talked quite a bit about on the podcast, is kind of religious deconstruction, or like unlearning things. And that is kind of a central theme that shows up in the movie. So I really connected with that. Yeah. It's pretty subtle. Like, you can just enjoy it as a horror movie, but there's one scene in particular that I really liked. And, but that movie has some deeper things on its mind. Ty West is the director of that one.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think I had one more. Oh, The Black Phone. I really liked as well. Scott Derrickson's newest horror movie. There's a lot of hype about it. It's the scariest movie in years, and it was really scary. But I think I still prefer his previous film, or his previous horror movie, Sinister. I'm a really big fan of that one. And this is, it's got some similarities, and I think it's really strong and just like really well plotted and that sort of thing. So just mention it as, you know, if you like horror movies, I think The Black Phone is definitely worth checking out. But yeah, I think that's all I had. Oh, and then I did have one other, In Front of Your Face. So Hong Sang-soo is a director I've just kind of recently got into, and that's one of his new ones. And I really, really liked it as well. He's this Korean director, makes his really quiet, long shots, kind of dialogue driven movies. So like, not for everyone, but I really, really found a lot to like about that
maybe,
as well.
Maybe
so,
Drive My Car-esque.
Yeah, maybe kind of like that. His movies are shorter, though, which is interesting. Like, they
most movies are.
yeah, exactly. Kind of in that vein. He has a lot of, he puts out like one or two movies a year, and they tend to be, between like an hour and a half. So a little shorter, but yeah, really just quiet, contemplative. I did a podcast on that one a few weeks back, and then he has another one coming out this year too. I can't remember the title of it, but very interesting director, and definitely one I recommend checking out if that sounds interesting to you. So
very cool.
Well, all right. I think this has been I think we both have solid lists. I like the list we gave, and I hope this gave some people some things to check out if that they maybe haven't heard of. Get excited for Thor as well. That's my main takeaway today. Is like, wow, I'm really excited for Thor now. Can't wait to check that out. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Russell. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and yeah, we'll definitely want to have you back again to talk movies soon. This has been a pleasure.
Yeah, man, have fun.
Thanks again to Russell. I can't believe we both have the same film at number one. Coming up next on the show, I'm finally going to finish up that film noir series I was doing a couple months ago. We just lack one film, and that is Chinatown, 1974's neo-noir, directed by Roman Polanski and starring Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway. Rance Collins will be back for that one, so stay tuned for that. And then the following week, my plan is to discuss Nope. That is the new horror film from Jordan Peele. Very excited for that one. And that does it for this episode of Art House Garage. Thank you so much for listening. We've got a few years worth of episodes now, and you can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob free.